Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, Dan.
Hey, Chip.
Damn, my man. All right, so we'll start it from right now. All right, welcome into the Chip Williams podcast here on Blog Talk Radio. We are joined by one of my favorite guys on Twitter and one of my favorite guys that covers the Grizz, Cam Rose. What's up, Cam?
Yo, Chip, how you doing, man? I usually don't come out of hibernation often. In a while, but had to do it for you. Anytime I can, or anytime we can link up and talk Grizz, I get excited. So let's do it.
Good. I appreciate that. I appreciate you making the exception for me. Usually just kind of hang in the rafters and every once in a while drop down and throw some knowledge down on everybody.
That's exactly what I go for. Sting didn't really come down too often, but when he did, he usually come down with gems, and I try to adopt that mentality.
So for people that haven't heard of Cam Rose, how do I properly introduce you? I know they can follow you on Twitter at Cam Rose Show, but give me a proper introduction for Cam Rose.
A proper introduction would be someone who's not the cookie cutter Grizz guy, right? Like I never labeled myself as that, where I'm going to give you the rah-rah Grizzlies, or I'm going to fall in line with the norm for how to cover the Grizzlies. I never had to really rely on the Grizzlies, maybe people, for how I give my information, and that really rubs people the wrong way. I never had to build relationships with Grizzly guys, right, to, you know, keep what I'm doing, keep my information coming in. And for it to be, you can line up my info with the other guys' information, and 9 times out of 10 it's going to line up. So a proper introduction would just be, if you want real, uncut, honest evaluation of the Grizzlies, both on the court and off the court, then that's Cam Rose on the Grizzlies.
Good. That's why I like you, Cam. That's why I like you, because you're a little bit different than everybody else. That's why I wanted to record this podcast, because you've given a few thoughts on the Grizz. Every once in a while you'll drop in and you'll drop some knowledge on everybody. But I just kind of wanted to take your temperature on a lot of these Grizz things, because a lot's been going on, really. It's not the status quo Grizz. It's kind of been an up and down season. But so I want to start off with this. So one of the things that NBA guys try to do a lot is break news. Like, everybody wants to be Adrian Wojnarowski or Mark Stein or whatever, right? That's how you, I guess, gain a lot of credit or a lot of I don't know. That's how people start to find out about you, start breaking news. And you've done that. You've done that for the Grizzlies. You've probably done that as well or better than anybody else. that's been covering the Grizzlies for a long time.
Don't tell anybody that, Chip. Don't tell anyone that.
All right, that's a secret then. Fine. So I want to say, like, I've tried a couple of times, and there was one time specifically that I misworded something, and I swear to you, I had 7 people come at me and tell me how I had misworded it. And I was like, good God, I am so sorry for accidentally throwing an extra word or two in there. It's insane, right?
They're coming with pitchforks.
It is unbelievable how mad people get when you accidentally misword something. So, this is what you do. So how tough is it? Because in my very brief experience, it seems very tough to try to break news.
You know what I don't understand? When I had my radio show, and I tried to explain it numerous amount of times, right, Chip? Is that when you're in the business of getting information, right? If you're in the business of funneling or getting information funneled to you, that you are out of the power, right? There's no power from you. You're not the sole priority source, right? Everything is getting funneled. I try to make, like, you're basically the middleman, right? You're basically the middleman.
Right.
So if information comes your way, you have to be careful who you trust, if you're getting the information from, do you believe them? And then, so if something goes wrong, or if something, because everything is fluid, or if something backtracks, or if someone, you know, throws out a wrong word or anything like that, then you're to blame, right? But it doesn't work like that. It's not like we sit around and we go, you know what? I'm going to put this out there, or I'm going to, you know, magically break this news, or you're talking to the sole priority. I mean, sometimes it happens, but the majority of the time, that person is the middleman, with the agents, players, friends, family, you're the middleman. So if something happens
right.
and it doesn't report as you initially reported, I don't think you should blame that person. Just have enough, knowledge to know that, all right, there really was that person, but let's check their track record, and if it lines up, then I'm not really going to, blow up about it. But if it doesn't, then I maybe come up with a pitchfork. But also just see the sincerity in it as well, from that person's point of view, because we don't have to do that, right? We can just let you be in the dark. We can let you follow whoever you want to follow and get watered down, grid stuff about maybe Jordan Adams, me, or Brandon like me. It's just an example, guys. It's just an example. But it's just something along that nature.
And I think it's fair to point out that I notice what you do is sometimes you put out things of, like, conversations that the Grizzlies have had with somebody, as opposed to, oh, this is definitely going to happen. And people are so used to the, okay, whatever is put out is definitely going to happen. And so, like, you get chastised for that sometimes. And it's pretty unfair, because it's not like you're putting out, hey, a move is imminent. I'm just letting you know, hey, these are conversations that they've had, so keep an eye on that down the road. Is that fair to say?
That is about 90% of what I would like to go for. As a matter of fact, before I came on Twitter, when I just was on the Grizzly Message Board, shout out to the Grizzly Message Boards, by the way. You guys are some of the best Grizz fans. I know you guys are going to check this out. That was what I was going for. It wasn't to say I'm going to break news, because when I broke Nikolakis or the Bayless or whoever, right, it wasn't about that. It was about, for a long stretch of time, you would want to know what your team is involved in, right? I would want to know who, if they were talking about moving Courtney Lee, or if they were talking about maybe getting James Johnson, or whoever else it may be. Not necessarily right there breaking news on the spot, but to kind of give the fans some type of feel of, okay, what's going on, right? What's going on? What is their mindset? Who have they talked to? Because fans are, even if you're the Warriors, right, the Warriors are 20-0, and if you go to Golden State's side, Like, they want to trade, like, Andrew Bogut for DeAndre Jordan. So fans are always going to want to improve the team and always going to want to have some type of transaction. And I guess that's why I want to hinge most of my news off of, okay, this is who they've been talking to. And we're going to have a couple of gems in this section that I haven't put on Twitter that I've been sitting on.
Good.
But that's just some of them.
That's what I brought you on here for. You got to throw some out there.
Yeah, but that was just my mindset to be like, okay, these guys are on the radar. So just look out. It may not be right there on the spot, but you best believe that you can go back to Twitter and say, okay, Cam said this a month ago, and now look what's happening.
That's absolutely true. So tell us, who's going to be the next Memphis Tiger football coach? That's what everybody wants to know. I know you know.
It's going to be Les Miles, right?
Absolutely. Hey, that would be fun. I think the Tigers have artificial turf, so Les Miles didn't eat any of the grass.
Or we could just bring back Calipari. Like, who wouldn't love it?
Calipari coaching football? Hey, we could.
Yeah, I mean, because Jaeger's getting canned anyway, right? So just give him control of the Grizzlies and the Tigers. Like, who wouldn't love it, man?
Just make him the U of M AD and the Memphis Grizzlies general manager, and we'll just be done with it. He'll just be the sports czar of Memphis, Tennessee, John Calipari. That'd be fun. That'd be a lot of fun, at least. Let's talk about Dave Jaeger. It's been kind of a weird season with Dave. It's been really weird for Dave ever since he got to Memphis, you know, because the way he got here, you were replacing a coach that had basically taken the Grizzlies to the most successful places that they'd ever been in franchise history, and it was a pretty unpopular firing, I think, or I guess not ringing up of his contract. It was very unpopular. There were a lot of big Lionel fans, and so when he got here, it was expected that, okay, you know, you're going to have to do something that Lionel did that Lionel didn't do, and that's build upon the success and take the Grizzlies even farther. So here we are. We've gotten a big enough sample size now of Jaeger. He's in year three. What is your opinion of Dave Jaeger as a coach?
Well, Chip, again, that's something I got hammered on time and time again. If you guys can go back to my Twitter even before I really start, I guess, getting in motion. And I have this picture of Dave Jaeger. I think it's February 2012, right? Just like maybe a year before, or maybe a couple months before he got the job. And I made this my first gift, right? And it says like my body is ready, because I had been here. Again, this is like one of my very first posts on the Grizzlies. Right? You can go there, you can see the date, and it says my body is ready. And again, I had heard that Dave Jaeger was going to eventually make that ascension or those couple inches over. And so by that time, I had already been, I guess, berated with he's going to be the next Popovich, right? Or you look at his track record, he's George Karl, he's Flip Saunders, right? And I started to buy into it. So when he got on, I wouldn't say my opinion was skewed, but I was buying the accolades. And that's not to say, like, he's a good coach. Please don't misunderstand me. He is a good coach. But
right.
I think that he may be – I think he's a better coach than what he is today, right? Like, I think that would be absolutely fair to say that he thinks he's a better coach. Dave Jaeger, maybe – is he a top-10 coach? In or out of the NBA, probably so, maybe not, but you can make that argument. But what you can say is that he's not better than Byron Scott. He's not better than Randy Whitman. You know, he's not better than Scott Brooks. So he's a good enough coach to get the Grizzlies where they need to be. I think what Dave Jaeger is, again, he thinks he's a veteran coach. It's kind of like the David Black mentality, right? Last year when He said that he got tired of being asked, was he a rookie coach? And I'm not a rookie coach, right? I was over in Europe when actually he was. The same thing with Dave Yeager, right? I'm not a rookie coach. I've been a head coach before, minor league. I guess you call it the small guy complex or whatever you want to call it, right? Dave Yeager had it. And he's
right.
Starting to mature more and starting to maybe get a better feel of personalities because that's one of the things he lacked, and being leaders of men, which is still a negative that some people view him as. I'm not going to say it's power. I'm not going to say it's the boogeyman Joe Biden, right? We probably this podcast is not going to make it out once I mention his name, by the way. But he still is getting a better grasp of leading men, and he still has to get a better grasp of it. His rotations are sometimes quirky. But when you just look at the pros and cons, in all actuality, if we're being real, Dave Yeager pros outweighs his cons. And that's about the only thing you can ask for a coach. And is he growing? And if you look at from one to two to now year three, he's actually growing. So I can't knock Dave Yeager at all for coaching because I'd be a hypocrite because I beat him up and held him up on a pedestal for long enough way before, you know. So I'm fine with Dave Yeager for right now. Do I think he can be better? Yes. Do I expect him to be better? Yes. Is he kind of, slimy? You know, does he come off as kind of untrustworthy? Has there been rumors about him doing, you know, backstabbing type things? Yes. But as far as coaching a basketball team, I think he's adequate.
Right, I think that's true. I think if you look at it, you look at the way that Lionel coached, you can just see the way that the Grizzlies have improved. Just a lot of it's subtle, you know, like if you look at the fact that the Grizzlies are aware of getting two-for-ones at the end of quarters, that mm-hmm. used to not really be the case under Lionel. I think that was one of the big knocks. And obviously the biggest knock under Yeager is the rotations. He does weird stuff with the rotations, and sometimes he kind of has to do it because he's kind of searching. But I wonder how much of the weird rotations that come with Yeager are a function of the fact that the Grizzlies just have a weird roster. Like the way this roster is constructed is just kind of weird. And it seems like Yeager this year is starting to transition the Grizzlies away from what they've been the last five seasons, which is pound it inside, play defense, grab offensive rebounds, grab defensive rebounds, and play the game, you know, in the low 90s. And now they're starting to open it up a little bit more. And that some of that, again, is out of necessity because Zach Randolph missed time, Brandon Wright's missed time.
Mm-hmm.
But so would it be fair to call this year a transition year and maybe starting in 2016, that summer when there's some cap space and the Grizz can do some stuff, that we might start to finally see these Grizzlies transition away from this grit and grind era?
I think it would be fair to say. I've said it before. I try to tell people this most of the time, which is this is anything but new, right?
Dave
tried to implement this his first training camp, right, where they said it felt like a country club, and I believe it was in Nashville. I'm not even quite sure. I think it was in Nashville. Right?
Yeah, I think it was.
His first year coming off the Western Conference Finals. This is what he envisioned, but I'm pretty sure this isn't the finished product, right, of what he envisioned, but this is similar to what he wanted, and the Grizzlies weren't responsive to it, whether it be Mike Conley, Zebo, Mark, that they weren't responding to it well. I think after getting their doors blown open, right, by the Golden State Warriors and the Spurs and realizing, okay, last year they finally come to this great conclusion as a team, players meeting only or whatever, that they needed to change some things. They needed to buy into an offense. So hence Dave Yeager finally trying to implement what he's been trying to implement. I don't like calling the Yeager ball. I really hate that term. But hence him implementing some sort of modern offense. And like he's saying, we don't have to shoot the three ball all the time. I'd rather use my offense to just get laid up, similar to George Karl, right? George Karl basically built his offenses on attacking the basket. Flip Saunders basically built his offense on pick and pops and for the around the mid range. So he's going to have, I guess, similar offenses to those guys he looked up to, his mentors. So
right. You
don't have to shoot 1,000 three balls like the Golden State Warriors or whoever else. Like, he's building this offense. Everyone was like, oh, wow, we scored 113 points. Don't quote me on that. I think it's 113 on 2 3-pointers. That is what Dave Gagel wants. Mark had open mid-range jump shots for days, and he knocked them down, right? He had open lanes, open court cuts, and your defense jump-started your offense, right? Easy, fast break buckets. That is what Dave ever had envisioned. Not, oh, shooting 1,000, you know, three balls a game, but the New Orleans game is more similar to what a Dave Vega offense looks like.
Yeah, I think that everybody gets kind of caught up in the everybody wants to play like the Golden State Warriors, and the fact is that there just aren't that many Draymond Greens, and there just aren't that many Steph Currys, if any. Either one, they're just so unique the way that roster was built, so you kind of have to work with what you've got. And listen, like, you know, we'll talk about Jeff Green a little bit later, but, you know, the guy, he's been pretty good, yeah, especially once he figured out that, hey, if I shoot open threes and I attack the basket and get to the foul line, I'm going to be very effective. And that's, I think that's a big credit to Dave Joerger for being able to kind of harness him in and get the most out of Jeff Green. So last question on Joerger. Was it true that he was on the hot seat early on, or was that media just kind of trying to connect the dots of what we've heard in the past?
All right, this is where I'm going to need, like, my own sound, right? Like my own soundboard, like maybe a ding or something. This would be my first jam on Dave Joerger, which would be yes. Again, I'm not going to say the boogeyman's name because I fear for my and your life. But
hey, Joe Biden, there was, he's around. He's listening somewhere.
There were talks with Tom Thibodeau, right? There's no,
right.
I've said it to people behind the scenes. Some of you Grizzlies, some of the fans' favorite guys, I've had conversations behind the scenes about Tom Thibodeau and parents' love for Tom Thibodeau. Another guy that I'm not gonna jump 2 feet in, but as of maybe 2-3 weeks ago, that they were monitoring, which was everyone's favorite, Lou Walton.
You
can best believe that he's gonna be on the radar. Depends on how things continue to go with this season or what Dave Joerger wants to do, because Minnesota is prevalent in his mind, whether people want to believe or not. I don't, and to be honest, I'm sold as I don't care how good the Grizzlies do this year. I believe Minnesota is always going to be prevalent in his mind. I'm 100% backing that. So this coaching thing, even if Joerger wins, it's not going to be set in stone that he's not going anywhere. It's one of those things, because with the Grizzlies, nothing is easy. We've witnessed this 1,000 times. Nothing is easy, and a lot of times nothing is as it seems. So this is one of the things to keep an eye on. But, again, to answer your question again, yes, Dave Joerger was on the hot seat. Yes, Perrell does question his leadership ability sometime. Is he Perrell's guy? 100%. I'm not going to say personality-wise. No, he isn't. You can't see, you're not going to walk in to Flying Saucer and see Perrell and Dave Joerger, you know, throwing back Jägermeisters. You may see Perrell and Tom Thibodeau, but you're not going to see Perrell and Dave Joerger. So that is something to keep an eye out on.
All right, so I'm gonna ask you for a ridiculous prediction that I've all told you to. If I hold a gun to your head and I say Dave Joerger is the Memphis Grizzlies head coach in 2016-2017, what would you say?
I say it's a 60% chance that this, that he's not going to be the coach. Maybe 65.
Okay. So you think it's more likely he's not?
I do. I again, it's just my personal, put the pitchforks down. I personally think of, I kind of abide by the rule of whether smoke, there's fire, from
right.
my point of view, right? You know, and I've heard just a tad bit too much about other coaches, even as, you know, early as maybe a week and a half ago, right? So,
okay.
I just think
fair enough.
Yeah, I just think Dave Yeager's probably not going to be here next year.
And you think probably ends up in Minnesota? Because, they're not keeping Sam Mitchell.
I think Minnesota's the only job. If people want to go with Calipari, when he said Kentucky was the only job, or Fuente, Virginia Tech was the only job. Well, for Dave Yeager, and that feeling may be mutual. It may be a difference, is that I don't think Carroll is 100% on Dave Yeager's side, and Dave Yeager's not 100%. I don't want to say committed, because I think he's smart enough and well-coached enough to be committed to what he's doing now. But I think that he probably, when offseason comes and he kicks his feet up and talks to whoever he talks to, I think Minnesota is going to be a big deal to him.
All right. Zach Randolph, he's kind of been a topic of discussion the last, I don't know, I would say 2 weeks or so, because, you know, he's hurt. He had to miss a few games. So the Grizzlies, Dave Yeager, they had to improvise what they did. Kind of brought Green back into the starting lineup. Matt Barnes was playing a little bit of the four, stretch four. Where do we stand on Zach? I mean, is this So Yeager has talked about he wants to keep one of either Zach Randolph or Marc Gasol on the floor. And Chris Harrington, I heard him say, and I agree with this, that may be code for Yeager saying, I don't want them on the floor together as much. I want to keep one or the other, and I want to split those two apart. And maybe that's partly because Brandon Wright's been hurt and they don't really have a whole lot of another option. But I think it's also completely fair to say that the Grizzlies' offense, it looked pretty good without Zach. It's not time to move away from Zach, I don't think. But where do we stand? I mean, is it time to maybe, you know, cut Zebo's minutes back to 25? Is it time to maybe bring him off the bench? I mean, where are we right now with Zach Randolph?
We're going to talk about Tony Allen as well, right? And I think this is going to fit in the same categories what I'm going to go with 50 for the city, right? With the Zebo, with Zach Randolph, the bully on the block, the mayor of Memphis, a.k.a. the dog, whatever you want to call him, right? A.k.a. MacBo 50. You can't trade Zach Randolph. You can't. I'm at the point where now I just want him to disintegrate a Memphis Grizzlies. When the time comes, whether he moves from the fifth man, from the starter to the sixth man, to the eighth man, to the 13th man, just let him fade into dust in that Grizzlies jersey. Because I do think that a smart coach, and Dave Yeager has shown to be a smart coach, whether it's here or another coach, that you can be a good offense with Zebo, whether he's playing 25. I don't know if you can be that, him playing Mark and Zebo together, which is what we alluded to, because of the lack of pick-and-roll defense, because of the shape he's come back in. So he's really not playing as good a defense. He's not as nimble. He's not as light. Same thing for Zebo. So teams really exploit the pick-and-roll with Mark and Zebo on the court. You can score with Zebo. Last year when the Grizzlies were starting, what was it, 12-2 or whatever crazy record we had, and everyone was jumping for joy.
Yeah.
The Grizzlies had a top five ranked offense in the league. So it can be done. Has that time passed us by? I think that's the question on that. How efficient you can score with Zebo as a prevalent member of the offense, I think, has to come into question. But I do think that he can find minutes. I think he's not going to be a 20-10 guy consistently. He hasn't been that for a while now. 15-7, 14-8, I think that's good enough for maybe a fourth wheel. And I think that's the role that he's probably going to he's going to go into. And as well as all summer, you heard from maybe the Sean Respers of the world, I feel like Tony Allen, the Ibakas of the world, the Azaleas of the world.
Yeah.
I feel that that you said the Azaleas of the world was they were going to Tim Duncan, the big fella. You know, they were going to, you know, sit him down. That they weren't going to put too many minutes on him. And I think you were saying this, and even as early as the Zach Randolph, do I put quotations, knee injury with my quote fingers, I guess, I think we probably can all agree that half of it was maybe a little knee soreness, and the other half was, okay, we're just going to stick the big fella out because we're trying to preserve him. And I think that's the direction they're going to have to go. They're going to have to go in more down the line, and I fully expect them to do. But to answer your question, yes, I think you can absolutely still have a functioning, non-dinosaur, non-prehistoric offense with Zach Randolph getting 25-plus minutes tonight.
I wondered that. You know, that sat him against the Houston Rockets saying, you know, that his knee was sore. And whatever. And so they had the next night, they played the Rockets on a Friday. That Saturday they were going to go and play the Spurs on a back-to-back. And I wondered if that was them resting Zach, getting him ready for the second night of that back-to-back when they would really need him. He didn't end up playing, so maybe that's not true, but I do think there is some of that factored in, that we're going to make sure that Zach is healthy, and we're not going to overextend his minutes if we don't have to, because – I mean, listen, you've got the guy for the next couple of seasons, and I do trust Jaeger to figure out what's the best way to use him, and I agree that Zach still has a lot of value in today's NBA. I mean, for a while there, I know it wasn't pretty at the beginning of the season, but he was your best player. I mean, Mike Conley was not good, Marc Gasol was not good, and Zach Randolph was the guy that was carrying that team. And if not for him, I mean, the Grizzlies would have been in total disarray. So, Any talk of trading him or whatever people want to say, it's very premature. Let's kind of see
you,
how this thing plays out.
I'll tell you one more thing about Zebo. It doesn't help, or I guess you can say it does help, that let me recant that. I guess it doesn't help if you're a Mark and Mike Conley fan, right, if you're a believer that they can shoulder offense or shoulder a team load or whatever. But it doesn't help that Mark is the absolute dominant alpha. I mean, Zebo is the absolute dominant alpha male on this team. He's the only guy who's going to want the ball, who's going to feel like, okay, I can put this team on my shoulder, whether he has it or whether he doesn't. It's what people love about Kobe and all of the greats. Zebo has that mentality where just throw it to the hand, and I'm going to get us out of whatever we're in right now. And Mark and Mike do not have that mentality. If they did, the Grizzlies would be better off for it. But heck, if a lot of guys had that mentality, their teams would be better off for it. Either you got it or you don't.
All right. So two things I want to talk about. We can kind of lump them together. Tony Allen is kind of in the same situation, I guess, that Zach Randolph finds himself in. It's, you know, kind of what's his status going forward? But I think that also kind of begs the question, like, who's been the best Grizzlies wing so far? Or what's the best wing combination, maybe? Because for so long, Tony Allen, while he doesn't always pass the eye test, I mean, you can just look at the plus-minus numbers. You can look at his efficiency rating. All of the best Grizzly lineups every single year involved Tony Allen. I mean, he was making an impact whether, you know, you kind of liked it or not. Well, it's not that way this year. I believe three out of the four best Grizzly lineups do not include Tony Allen. He's got a PER under 12. I mean, he just has not been great. He hasn't been great to your eyes. He hasn't been great on the numbers. They kind of both. Where do we stand, I guess, with Tony Allen then?
I think with T.A., the self-proclaimed grandfather, he hasn't looked good, Chip. And if we're being completely honest, he has to look terrible.
Right.
As Charles Barkley says. He, on defense, on offense, touch-wise around the rim, but the most concerning thing about me, here's the thing. A lot of people think I don't like Tony Allen. When I was on the radio, I preach this over and over again, whether it's personality or whatever. Yes, it tend to rub me the wrong way, but that's because of the pedestal that this Grizzlies fan base put on basically a role player, and that's what rubbed me the wrong way. He was not an all-star, not a superstar, but a role player, and you had a role player dictate PR moves and a role player dictate how the Grizzlies were going to play. So what really bugs me about Tony Allen is that he has these mental lapses as a veteran player, as a 10-year-plus player, that his basketball IQ just drops off the map, right? At 34, I believe, he has times where he makes rookie mistakes, where you probably could put Jarrell Martin out on the court and he wouldn't make the same mistake as Tony Allen. That's what bugs me about Tony Allen. It's not the it's the trick or treat, I guess. And eventually, maybe the trick or treat should go away, right? Maybe you should realize, okay, what I can do and what I can't do, and partially why Tony Allen can't realize what he can and cannot do is because he has a green light from the fan base, from Memphis in general,
right?
So he's gonna try to do. So those are things that he feels like he gets away with. Tony Allen, with that said, probably shouldn't be traded. And I don't want to be traded, right? Because I know enough about how this thing works to know that Tony Allen is still going to be a valuable piece off the court for young players coming in, for basically a Kevin Garnett role, right?
Right.
He'll still keep people in line. He'll teach work ethic because he does have a great work ethic, even if he hasn't improved his offense in all his years in the NBA, right? He does have a great work ethic. He does have a thing for defense. So those are things I would like to see the Grizzlies carry along. And as Mark said over the summer to Robert Parra, which is they care about this team, not just right now, not just in the next 2 years, but for years after, right? They want the mantra, the toughness. They want the identity of the Grizzlies to still be what it is today. Last year, they want that 2 years ago. They want that identity to be here 10, 15 years from now. So I think Tony Allen is prevalent for that. A lot of people were down on Tony Allen, and again, myself as well, but I've never been up on TA because they feel like that he was blocking maybe a young guy like Tony Allen, I mean like Jordan Adams, young J.A. Sizzle, or Jamal Franklin, right, or whoever else. They felt like that he was blocking them and that they wouldn't get a chance to do anything, but I'm here to tell you that if Dave Yeager is coaching this team, and you can look at it this year, he's basically not that. He's going to be what he's going to be, which is we already said that Tony Allen is a rotational player, a bench player, a situational player, and that's what his minutes dictate this year. He's used sparingly in the third and fourth quarters. I can't remember the last time Tony Allen finished out a game, if I'm being completely honest with you. He's only playing 5 minutes, maybe in the first quarter. And then I think he's done for like all of the second. He comes back out in the third quarter, plays another 5 minutes or 10 minutes or whatever. And at the end of the night, you look up and he's only playing maybe 15, 16 minutes a night. And I think that's the role. You want to contain Tony Allen, right? You want to contain him. You want to contain the chaos that is Tony Allen. I think that's the role that he's in now. And it's not going to go from 15 minutes to 30 minutes. Like, this is going to be his course maybe for the next length of his contract, which is from 15, maybe down to 10, and maybe some DMPs, you know, down the line from here. So with what I said about Tony Allen, with what I feel about him, I still think he's prevalent off the court. for the Montreal and going forward that there's no need to trade Tony Allen anymore, right? No one is going to give you a value for what he actually means to the city and to the team. So just keep him here and let him fade into dust in the Grizzly uniform.
Yeah, and listen, like, I think Tony Allen is so beloved by everybody. It's not just Grizzly fans. Like, people around the NBA love Tony Allen. But I think it's also okay to say, hey, he hasn't been very good this year. So I think one thing that people often, they too often do, there's kind of two ends of the spectrum. There's either people, they use their eyes to do everything and they despise mm-hmm. using numbers. Or there's people that love the numbers and then they just ignore completely what their eyes are telling them. So what I've always tried to do is, hey, if my eyes are telling me something, I go look at the numbers. If those back it up, then I know that that's mm-hmm. right. If not, I try to figure out what's going on. Well, if you just watch Tony Allen play basketball, it doesn't look good. Now, it doesn't always look good. Even when Tony Allen, the numbers are telling you, yeah, he's being very effective on the game, your eyes don't always tell you, hey, that's what he's doing, right? It does not look pretty all the time. But with Tony, it's been particularly not very good this year. And so if you go and you look at it, Tony Allen, his career for the Grizzlies has been a +4. Every time he steps out on the court, the Grizzlies are 4 points better than their opponents. Well, this year, he's mm-hmm. a -6. That's a 10-point swing. Tony Allen's 10 points worse than what he's been for the Grizzlies. And also his PER. He's got a 15.1 career PER with the Grizzlies. It's down to 11.9 this season. So the numbers are telling you what your eyes are telling you, is that Tony Allen has just not quite been as good this season as he has been for the Grizzlies. And so how you fix that, I like the way you say it. You just kind of, you maybe back off a little bit, you know. And so that brings us, I guess, to the next question is, what are the Grizzlies going to do at wing? Because they have a lot of guys that they can use, but I think they're still trying to figure out how to use them. So what is Cam Rose's solution to that?
I think there is maybe, I wouldn't say a hesitancy, because I guess you can't say that, right? Because they really couldn't make a move right now if they wanted to because of J.A. Jordan Adams being injured.
Right. Right.
But with the wing, with this wing corps in general, and I did call them a wing corps, right? There are corpses out there that are really old, man, okay?
Right.
And they're so average, Chip. Like, they're so average.
Yes.
Tony Allen, you talked about T.A., right? Well, yeah. No one talked about is in all the numbers, but the number that I really haven't seen anyone throw out is that defensive rating, though. That defensive rating, though, is what Tony Allen has made his career off of, and it's not a good defensive rating this year. And I think that's more challenging.
It's the worst in his career with the Grizzlies.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
I think that's more telling than the free throws, field goals, whatever else, your PERs. The defensive rating is what is substantial for Tony Allen. If you see the decline, then it's going to match your eyes. As far as the wing corps, you have average Courtney Lee. Three averages. Anyone play 2K who's listening to my man Chip Williams' podcast, Courtney Lee is the generic shooting guard. Before you start, you're my player, whatever you start, and you just have this base default guy. That's Courtney Lee. Courtney Lee is always going to be that guy.
Yeah.
Courtney Lee's not going to change his stripes at 30 years old, guys. I think most fans realize that he's not going to take on a bigger load and jump to another ceiling, right, and bust through the ceiling. No, this is his ceiling. He's actually been on this ceiling since his first year in the league. So this is Courtney Lee. What you see is what you get. And then we have Jeff Green, the T, as they like to call him, around the organization. Like your head honchos are going around calling Jeff Green the big T, right? So
that's perfect. That's the best nickname I've ever heard for Jeff Green.
So So you have that working for you. You know, you have a guy who, again, he's 29. He's not gonna magically make another. He's not gonna jump through the ceiling. Jeff Green is always gonna be Jeff Green, and when you put Jeff Green on a team such as this, he's not gonna give you a 15, 16 a night game in Boston regularly. He's gonna give you 7-13 a night, right? Like that's probably no. There's no problem to it. That is what he's going to be on this Grizzlies team. 7
right.
points to 13 a night is what he's going to give you, and occasionally he may bust out a 20-point game. But the majority of the time, in reality, on this globe that we call planet Earth, on the Grizzlies, he's going to give you 7 to 12. That's basically what you can count on him for. And then you have Matt Barnes, who, by the way, looks like the best wing we've had, which is frightening, sad, and sickening at the same time. Because Matt Barnes is a guy who has played for almost every team in the league, Chip. And he comes
here. I think he's played for every team twice.
And he's looking like the best wing. And again, it's frightening. So we don't even want to go with the corpse of Vince Carter, who every time he comes in the game, right, he's like unwrapping his mummy cloths, right? Like he takes 5 minutes to get on the court because he's unwrapping his legs with the bandages. So at the end of the day, this wing core, whether they win or not, is going to have to be upgraded. But then you get to the landscape of the NBA, and you realize that, okay, what wings are out there to get? And I'm pretty sure maybe we'll talk about, okay, what moves we're going to make. But what wings are out there? Eric Gordon, Danilo Gallinari is gone. Harrison Barnes is overrated. It's all get out. And you're going to throw you don't want to throw a boatload of money at Harrison Barnes, the Black Falcon or the Black Canary, or whatever you want to call him. Bradley Beal is not leaving Washington. And do you really want to make a shooting guard your priority when you don't even know what you have in your Jordan Adams, first rounder?
Right.
So it gets tricky. It gets sad. Like if we're being completely honest, it gets sad. Where do you go? Do you go Evan Fournier? But again, he's a shooting guard. Do you want to?
I don't know. Although Fournier, I do think is a guy you might can play at three. He's got a little bit of size to him. I agree with you. It's kind of to the point where what do you do? You know, what can you do? So, let's talk about Jordan Adams. We've dropped his name a couple of times. I think you and I are on the same page. We're ready to see what Jordan Adams has. We're ready to see Jordan Adams a player because in the flashes he's looked good. Really, he did not play all that well in summer league, and he was still great. Like he was still clearly the best Grizzly in summer league.
Don't disrespect him, Chip.
Never. I would never do that.
Don't disrespect the shooting guard.
He wasn't even great, and he was still clearly the best Grizzly player in summer league.
And he had the bum knee. He got the bum knee in the second quarter of the first game in Brooklyn. So basically, the summer league, the Tim Gergerich camp, all of that was on a knee issue that I guess has still been undisclosed, but I may try to shed a little bit more light on it for Grizz fans because I see everyone asking the Grizz guys, right, what's going on with Jordan Adams. Well, I'm going to try to shed a little bit more light on it.
Yeah, tell me about it. That's what I was going to ask you. What have you heard about his injury?
From my understanding, he has a strain. I want to say it's an MCL strain. And basically what I got was, what if the Grizzlies treated Jordan Adams like the Jazz treated Gobert, right? You just came out and said, hey, he has a strain. He's out indefinitely right now, right? Instead of just having people wondering and guessing, that's a lot of what I want to take out of, again, from the very first conversation we had at this, is what I want to do, take a lot of the guessing out of it. Why not just say he's out indefinitely? right? Same thing with Brandon Wright. Why not just say he's out indefinitely instead of having people guess, okay, when is this guy coming? Because at the end of the day, for Jordan Adams, he looks like the beacon of light for a lot of Grizz fans, right? For this wing core, or will they finally develop a talent or whatever? So my understanding, he has a strain, and they're being very cautious with it because they rushed him back for, I think, the Golden State game. And the Golden State game, I think, is where he got injured. And even the Orlando game is the last preseason game. He really wasn't ready, but at the same time, it wasn't as minuscule. In the summertime, they made it seem like he was just going in for a scope, you know, to clean up some debris or whatever. And from my understanding, that wasn't it. Again,
right.
I don't know why they didn't just say, hey, he has this or whatever. And to try to clarify, I don't think both injuries are related. I think because he had that, I think it put a little bit more, his knee or whatever, ligaments were probably a little bit more vulnerable, right, than they would have if he didn't have that surgery, which is, I guess, a stroke of good luck, because it could have been a lot worse. Maybe he could have toured or, you know, maybe he has. But like I said, from my understanding, it's just I don't want to call it a severe strain, but a strain that's good enough to the point where not good enough. It sounds horrible, but a strain that's significant enough that they just want to say, okay, we're just going to let you sit out for right now because you're 21 years old, and we're going to try to give you every opportunity to, you know, gain some momentum. You know, so it's an 82-game season, so they're not rushing him. But I don't, for the life of me, I don't know why they just want to say, hey, he's out indefinitely, and we'll update you later on down the road.
And that's perfectly fine. Like, I am totally fine with a 21-year-old Jordan Adams taking as much time as he needs to make sure that he's 100%. There's no reason to rush him back. You know, it's not like Marc Gasol is dealing with the same injury. If it was Mark, you'd want him back as fast as possible. With Jordan, I would much rather not risk further injury and just let the kid get healthy, and then when he's ready to go, then you start to develop them. So I guess that leads to the next question then. And I have a theory that I ran past you last night, and we were texting back and forth, and I said, so Vince Carter is out there playing right now, and it's bad.
Mm-hmm.
The guy, he can't move. I mean, he legitimately cannot move. And it got to the point where in that Pelicans game, Dave Joerger was almost playing with like a stretch four. Like, that's where we are with 6'5" 6'6" Vince Carter. He's so old and cannot move. He is basically having to play stretch four. And he's actually made shots. I mean, he's actually looked pretty decent shooting the ball. But my theory with Vince Carter, and I totally just made this up, but maybe Joerger's playing Vince Carter so that he knows when Jordan Adams comes back, he can basically just sit Vince Carter down and have a spot in the rotation already carved out for Jordan Adams. Maybe that's totally way off, but that's the only way I can feel a little bit better about throwing Vince out there. It's like, okay, in a month, that'll be Jordan Adams getting thrown out there. But what do you think? I mean, is there a spot for Jordan when he comes back?
Absolutely. But I don't,
okay.
Again, we texted last night, and I don't know if it's going to be that, because I think if you look at where Vince Carter is occupying most of his minutes, it's not on the wing, right? It's in the paint. So,
right.
You know, I'm not trying to shoot the theory down because I care about you, Chip. So I won't shoot the theory down per se. But if you do just look at the minutes that he's on the court and where he's spending most of his time, it's going to be, you know, at the four, right? And you'd be probably not going to, you know, throw George J.A. at the four, and probably not going to throw most of the time who Vince Carter's occupying, because you even have Mario Chalmers who's playing some two guard now, right? So that has to be taken into account as well. But with J.A., what's going to get him on the court, and Joerger has alluded to it, which is, I don't know if this has been made public or whatever, but I know for a fact that he said, I can't sit guys who I want to sit because Jordan Adams is hurt, right? Like, he can't sit Vince Carter. He can't sit Tony Allen. He can't sit Matt Barnes because Jordan Adams is hurt. So where I think Jordan Adams is going to get his minutes is when he decides to rest those guys. He's our kind of, this for a fact I know he has made public. He said that he wanted to sit Mark a while ago. You know, multiple nights he said he wanted to sit Mark, and he can't sit Mark because of Brandon Wright. So he, the age old, we've been talking about this for about two seasons, which is he gonna adopt the Popovich? the Popovich theory of relativity, right? Is he gonna sit? Mark on back to back. Is he gonna sit Tony Allen? And basically, he's came out and said that I can't sit those guys if Brandon Wright is not here or if Jordan Adams is not here. But basically, he's saying that he will do that. And if the guys were healthy, I do think Tony Allen would have been set by now. I do think Matt Barnes would have been set, and maybe even Courtney Lee, maybe even Jeff Green. You know, so I do think that he has adopted it, and I expect that to. And that's where I expect Jordan Adams to get his minutes from sitting the old guys.
Which that's something that I thought they could have done last year. And I think when Brandon Wright comes back, there's no real reason then to play Vince Carter. I mean, Vince Carter.
If Brandon Wright comes back, where
do we stand with Brandon Wright? Because he's, like, been day-to-day for a month now.
Here's where you stand, Brandon Wright. Brandon Wright has never played, I think, more than, like, 60 games, right? And that was in Dallas. Now the Grizzlies have this thing that they do, right? And they believe they're – and don't get me wrong, I'm not saying Drew Graham and the whole entire training staff is not a wonderful training staff. But they have this thing where I think they overvalue their training staff, right? Because what was Brandon Wright last healthy at? Phoenix?
Okay.
And Dallas.
Yeah, okay. So right? I'm looking at it right now. So here's how many games he played basically every season. 38, 39, 37, 49, 64, 58. And he played 75 last year. That was the most. That's because he was shipped around to Dallas, Boston, and Phoenix. So he combined to play 75 games. But other than that, you're right. I mean, he played 64 one year and hasn't played above 60 any other season past that.
Okay. So we're talking about, again, in Dallas. Dallas has a superb medical staff, right? A superb medical staff. Same thing with Phoenix, right? A superb medical staff. So it's not out of the realm of reasoning to assume that if a player goes to either Dallas or Phoenix or heck, even both during the season, then he's probably going to be fairly healthy. Now, same thing with Vince Carter. Vince Carter last was healthy in Dallas. He comes here, and that's probably – and again, I really didn't have a chance to relay this, but I'm going to relay it now even though it's old news, is that that's one of the reasons why the Grizzlies took their gamble on Vince Carter was that they believed that their training staff was up to par with Dallas and that they could get him back healthy and basically blew up in their face. So everyone, did the Grizzlies get damaged goods? The Grizzlies knew what they were getting. Don't kid yourself. They knew what they were getting. They just had faith their medical staff could do more than what their medical staff could do or what Vince Carter's body was able to do at that time. But if their medical staff was as good as they wanted it to be, the medical staff could have did a Dallas, which was, okay, he's not going to be where he's going to be after our test, after our evaluations. The Grizzlies medical staff should have came to the same conclusion, and maybe they did, but they still didn't care. That's what happened with Vince Carter, and like I said, we talked about Brandon Wright. He's probably not going to be – how many games have we played already, like 20 games?
Let's see. We played 19. Tonight against the Spurs will be 20. So Brandon Wright has played 7 of those games.
He's played 7 of those games. All right. So If we're being honest, we're probably not going to see Brandon Wright until maybe like February, like if we've just been completely honest.
Wow.
So that's basically where you know another deal is going to come.
Yeah.
Down the
road. So you tweeted that. So, okay, so the Mario Chalmers, James Ennis deal for Beno and Jarnell Stokes, that went down.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately you said that's setting them up to make another move down the road. What do you mean by that?
And that move is going to be one of Courtney Lee or Jeff Green or maybe both. Again, look at Jeff Green and Courtney Lee. They're like, I call them Coutinho, Mobley, and Steve, for instance. Any of my NBA old heads or NBA lifers will know the relationship that Coutinho, Mobley, and Steve, for instance, had together. You just can't move forward with this big core. You just can't. Jermichael Green, who I'm just up and down on Jermichael, man. I'm not even gonna lie.
You're up and down on J Mike?
Yeah. Because he plays 100% all the time. Like he got a pass at first because I just like to hustle. But now
And
look at his minutes and look at his impact on the game. Like, he just makes some bonehead decisions. I mean, he's a second-year player. Don't get me wrong. Well, basically, if you want to call him a rookie, because he still hasn't played 82 games. You know, he has to get stronger with the ball. He fumbles the ball. But, again, he's just a big core. I know for a fact, and if you want to quote me on it, I know for a fact that Courtney Lee has – how can I word this without getting – the pitchforks coming out, right? I know for a fact that Courtney Lee has, let's say, kind of hinted at wanting to be somewhere else, right?
Okay, sure.
Even in interviews, you know, practice or wherever he's talked about other things have been on his mind, you know, coming off the bench is hard, then coming off the bench is not hard, you know. Courtney Lee doesn't want to be here. Let me just, again, I said I wasn't going to be a cookie cutter. Courtney Lee doesn't want to be here. As a matter of fact, it's probably a huge probability that he's asked for a trade.
Okay.
I probably would maybe bet my house on it. A 30-year-old guy who's in a contract year, who wants to start in the NBA, pretty sure he's probably asked for a trade.
So I wrote before the season, this could be like the Courtney Lee everybody's wanted, right? Because he's in a contract year. He's probably going to be your starting two guard.
But it hasn't
worked out that way. I mean, it's been literally the exact opposite.
Yeah, except for, I think we can roll this tape back to maybe, I don't know, 20, 30 minutes ago when I said that Courtney Lee will always be Courtney Lee. He's the generic 2K guy, the default
player. No, you're right.
Like he's always going to be that. Don't expect a magic ceiling, you know, because what the contract guys do is they just hit their ceiling for that year. They don't create another one. You know,
right.
Al Harrington, Trevor Ariza. Like, Trevor Ariza was that, you know, when his contract year, he was that good before. You know, it just so happened that he was that good again on his contract year. You know, it happens all the time. So, I was never expecting a contract year accordingly. I was expecting a contract year, and the Grizzlies were too, a contract year Jeff Green, because he hit 16, 17 a game, and they was expecting him to hit that again this time. And it's not working. So back to Courtney Lee doesn't want to be here. I know for a fact that they have had conversations about Tyler Zeller. Do the numbers, I've been crunching numbers, and Tyler Zeller can't come here through a direct trade with Courtney Lee. I know it's probably going to have to be a third team, and I don't even know why Boston would. Well, maybe I don't think Courtney Lee would come to Boston again. They would have to be a third team, but I know Tyler Zeller is one of the names that I would go to bat for, that I know for a fact that you can quote me again. The Grizzlies have had talks about Tyler Zeller from Boston. I think, I want to say, it was another team, I can't I'm pretty sure I'll probably put it out on Twitter later on. But it was another team that had interest in Courtney Lee. Basically, it's for a big guy, right? They didn't need bigs. A lot of it is not rocket science. They need bigs, and they need a good big. And if you have Brandon Wright as a prominent rotation big, you're probably going to need a backup big, as we just realized with seeing his minutes played throughout his career. So, and I think the Grizz have come to their realization on top of Courtney Lee really not being too happy right now. I think it's going to be a mutual depart on both parties.
You know, I think the thing is that Brandon Wright is really going to be out until at least 2016 and maybe even another month or two into that, you've got to go get another big. I mean, that's just you don't have the numbers to play like like Matt Barnes. You can spot him at power forward every once in a while or in certain lineups against certain teams. But as your primary fourth big, Matt Barnes isn't going to cut it. And really, as your primary third big, as much as, you know, people like Jamichael Green, he's probably not going to cut it. So you've got to go make a move, and you got to go get somebody else. So I guess that'd be interesting to see. And my thing with Courtney Lee was the talent has always been there. Courtney Lee has had the streaks where he's been one of the best three-point shooters in the NBA. He's just so reluctant to shoot it sometimes. He gets in these funks where he will take four shots in a game and he has eight or nine open ones. And so that's what I wondered, if once we got to the contract year, Courtney Lee is going to start taking those open shots. And if he did, you know, it's not a stretch to think that Courtney Lee could average 12 or 13 a game. But number one, the shots have not been falling. He has not played well at all this year. So that's where I was with Courtney Lee. But listen, the guy's shooting 22% from three this season. It doesn't matter how many shots he's taking if they're not going to go in.
I think another thing, Chip, that I want all my non-basketball – trust me, I'm not trying to sound like Charles Barkley, right? If you didn't play basketball, you don't know what you're talking about. I'm not trying to come across as that guy. But you're kidding yourself if you don't think the evaluation of a player can be lacking if you haven't actually played basketball. And with Courtney Lee, I think maybe you would have to play basketball or just be a lifer to know that. Look at his game, right? He doesn't have – let's take his jump shot, for instance. Look at his jump shot. He has a low release. He shoots it right in front of him, and he jumps forward, right? Now, think about, let's say, Steph Curry, right? Now, who – say 10 seconds on the clock. Who do you think would have a better chance of getting their shot off just by their jump – just by their jump shot form? Just, you know, you get what I'm saying? Just by their jump shot form. So people want Courtney Lee to, he shoots it. You want to know why he pump fake? Because his jump shot is imperfect, right? He doesn't have a quick release. He shoots it in front of him, so he has to have a clear picture of the goal for him to shoot the amount of threes that people want him to shoot. Your jump shot has to facilitate that. You have to have a quick enough release to even get that jump shot off. So it'll be like John Lua. Prime example, John Lua. I want him to shoot more threes. By the time someone closes out on John Lua, he has a slow wind-up. NFL quarterbacks. We can compare it to NFL quarterbacks who have a slow wind-up. Luckily for us Titans fans, we have Mary Golda, who has one of the quickest releases I've ever seen. But you can compare it to quarterbacks, right? Courtney Lee doesn't have the jump shot to do what fans want him to do. He doesn't have the jump shot to be a player of that caliber, because a lot of that, you have to build your game. Some people, you know, you change your jump shot, you know, in the NBA, but at the end of the day, Courtney Lee doesn't have those tools. He's not going to be that guy that can carry an offense, that can average 15 a game. And like I said, we can even go – I really hate to put Jordan Adams on a pedestal, but Jordan Adams, me and you have talked about this before, has one of the quickest releases. And he doesn't –
yes, he does.
They call it a sliver of space, you know, to get your shot off. Courtney Lee needs a wide range of space to get his shot off. And good shooting guards and guys that you want to carry your offense, you know, they need – just a sliver of space. So just let's not put Courtney Lee. Let's break him down as a basketball player, not someone that you want him to be. And Courtney Lee is going to be who he's going to be.
No, I think that's totally fair. It was just that. So you looked at it last year, and he shot 40% from three last year. And so you expect the percentages to come up at some point,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, he's not going to sit at 22% the whole season. But, I mean, he's not been good, and he's been put on the bench, and rightfully so. Because if a guy's not good, you can't play him. And it's just as simple as that. And so I give Jaeger credit for that. And it's just, you know, here we are again. What are the Grizzlies going to do? Like, if they have all these wings, and, you know, at the beginning of the season, Matt Barnes was terrible. Well, he's playing pretty good now. Jeff Green, you don't know. I mean, one night he'll come out, he'll get 17 on 12 shots and
mm-hmm.
look great. The next night he'll come out and get 4 on 9 shots and look terrible. It's just, you just don't know every single night with these guys. And that's why it's a fluid situation, the Grizzlies wing rotation. It really is. That's kind of the way it has to be. I guess two last Grizz things, and we'll talk a little bit of Kobe because I want to get your thoughts on that. Mario Chalmers.
Okay.
He hasn't been great lately. He's been good.
Mm-hmm.
He's been good. He's been fine, I guess. Certainly the fit is better than Beno Udrih, just because the way that the Grizzlies like to play, the way Jaeger has forever since he's gotten here wanted to play two point guards, Mario Chalmers is perfect for that. And he lit the world on fire as soon as he got here. How much do you think that helped get the Grizzlies kind of back on track, or I guess get the ship right? Because they've won, I guess, 7 out of 9 or 8 out of 10 now.
Mm-hmm.
100%. How much can we attribute that to Mario?
100. Man, you know what? Again, we're just asking about Mario, not just the whole, the whole puzzle. Mario did his part, right? He came in for what he was brought in to do, and he did it. The other things help, yes, but if we're asking, how much can we contribute to Mario? I think a large number, because either you can look at a glass half full or glass half empty. And I think the glass half full would be, Mario came, and then maybe they got Mark and Zebo and Mike, ready to do what they do. I think a lot of people say, well, Mark and Zebo were already kind of trending up, and then Mario Chalmers came and kind of pushed them over the top. Either one is good.
Yeah.
But I tell people about this about basketball, right? Basketball is one of the only sports that one player could just come in and just make a noticeable difference, right? Especially a player that has the ball in their hands. Mario Chalmers played above his head. Yes, absolutely. He's not going to be the 20-point-per-game guy, but I do think he will trend back to maybe 11, 12 a night. I think he can get you 11, 12 a night in this offense. But what worries me about Mario Chalmers is being, grid-sized, which is like you get baptized in, like, the Grizzlies playbook, and then you come out of it a completely different player than you showed. It happened with Courtney Lee when he first came. It happened with James Johnson. It happened with Jeff Green when he first came, because a lot of people don't – if you remember, Jeff Green was, like, really good when we first got Jeff Green, right? Like, he was, like, really good. The Brooklyn game, the Orlando game, I think a game after that, he had another, like, 19, 20 points. But once that playbook got implemented and got installed, that free-flowing guy that fans were, going head over heels for was on the back burner. I think that's what happened with Mario Chalmers. He's more so trying to run the offense, because that's what Dave Jaeger envisioned. That's what he wanted his point guard to do. He doesn't want a free-flowing backup point guard. He wants a point guard that's going to be an extension of Mike Conley to a degree. And I think that's what Mario Chalmers, and luckily Mario Chalmers has in his skill set to where he can run the offense as a starter, as if he were the starter. And, but he hasn't been scoring. He hasn't been looking for his shot. He's just trying to run the offense. And I think that if the Grizzlies, maybe Dave Jaeger knows what's best for him, that he would kind of, go back and let Mario Chalmers be a little bit more free maybe more free-flowing, because last year he ran the second unit as a more free-flowing, no playbook offense out of you know, necessity, because he had to do it, because of Beno Udrich is not that type of point guard. Mario Chalmers is the type of point guard that Dave Eger wanted, and I think that for good or bad, we're going to see how it goes. But from my opinion, I think maybe he should go back and kind of, you know, take the reins off of Mario Chalmers a little bit, because we've seen what he can do. He gets to the line better than anybody on the team, maybe outside of Marcus All, in his 16 free throw game, which is going to push his stats a little over. But Mario Chalmers is a good player, and he can absolutely affect the team, and he has affected the team.
Yeah, I think there's some truth to that. I think that also it's fair to say that sometimes guys, when they get traded, they ride a little wave of momentum.
Oh, yeah,
I guess.
Absolutely. You have a honeymoon phase, Chip. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So, no, but I agree. I think also there are just some guys, they do a little bit better when they just kind of freelance. If you just kind of take the cuffs off of them and let them go play, they do better. And it looked like for a while Chalmers was that. I do think Jeff Green, though, is a guy that has done better now that he's kind of had those handcuffs put on him and he's kind of figured out what he needs to do, right? Because Jeff Green gets himself in trouble freelancing sometimes when he starts, you know, pulling up from 18 and missing jump shots or dribbling the ball too much. He does get himself in trouble. So it's a case-by-case thing. I guess we'll have to see how much it gets figured out as we go down the road. So James Ennis, that's the other guy that came over with Mario. I did just very, very surface level breakdown of James Ennis and his game. I think everybody knew. Huh?
Who is James Ennis, Chip?
Who is James Ennis? We're going to talk about him. We're gonna figure it out. You and
who,
I, we're going
to
figure it out.
Who is this guy?
Together.
He has to be a D-League bum. Like, who is James Ennis, Chip?
He can play. I think he can play a little bit. What do you think?
I think, you know, it's really, here's the thing. When you're talking to, I guess, people in the know, right? Oh, you're not in the know, right? If you're talking to people in the know, and you get a read of James Ennis, if you hear them talk about James, like, you would think that, like, he should be getting minutes right now, but that's not the case, so...
Right.
You really don't know what James Ennis is going to be for the Grizzlies, because it's like this, right? It's like, how can we sit here and say, yes, James Ennis can play, yes, James Ennis can do this if he doesn't get the time? And it goes with any player, with any rookie player. Like, you can't rely on something that you've never seen done by your team. Like, we can't sit here and say, hey, you know what? We know James Ennis is going to play one day. You know, because we thought we knew Jamal Franklin was going to play one day, and you see what happened. Or Tony Roden was going to play one day, and you see what happened. Or, you know, the list goes on and on and on. Josh Shelby, you know, the list just goes on.
Let's hope we
don't
add
know
Jordan
if,
Adams to that.
Listen, if they add Jordan Adams to their list, I'm going to FedEx them and I'm burning it down. But for James Ennis, I just don't know if they are seen in the same light. And that's, I think, one of the reasons, because Jordan Adams, like, has prominent backers in the front office and the ownership that's going to probably keep him from being the norm. But for a guy like James Ennis, whether I hate to see it or not, I do think that they would probably use him as trade bait. As Paul Anger said, I'm not going to say trade bait because I'm pretty sure he doesn't have any trade value alone, but in a package, I couldn't see them, you know, being hesitant. I think they'd just say, hey, you know, we'll package him for, you know, whoever. And I don't think that would be the necessary thing to do, because, like we talked about, James Ennis can play. He is a 6'7" bouncer, runner. He actually runs the floor. He reminds me of Corey Brewer. He runs the floor so hard. He attacks the basket so hard. He has these cherry picking qualities that Corey Brewer has, right? Where, like, you know, like, he's he's already at the half court line, you know, when someone's getting a rebound. He does these Corey Brewer type things, but he's more athletic and basketball IQ. He's probably not as good as Corey Brewer, but just say if you can get don't know, a poor man's Corey Brewer, or even, you know, not too far away from Corey Brewer, I think you probably have to play him. Like, I don't see why you would play Vince Carter and not James Ennis. Like, I can put that out there, like, right now. Like, I don't see why you wouldn't just put James Ennis on the court over Vince Carter.
Right.
I don't know why you wouldn't do it. Just his youth, you know, his energy. You talk about energy being contagious and why people love Jermichael Green. James Ennis has this same and again, I'm scared, Chip. I think that I just don't think he's going to get a chance here. At first,
no,
I don't think he does.
I think it's probably as likely that James Ennis at some point gets cut or traded as it is that, you know, he ends up as a real player for the Grizzlies. I think both of those scenarios are equally likely, and it's probably more likely that he even gets cut or gets traded before he ever gets a chance to really play. Because, I mean, at some point the Grizzlies may just decide, hey, we need a roster spot for, you know, whoever, and James Ennis was kind of he would probably be that first guy that they cut. I mean, I'm not sure who else.
I will say this though. If they haven't cut him while Ron Hollins was out, who Dave Egger actually stumped for, but come on now, how are you gonna freaking stump for Ron Hollins, Chip? Like, that's where you're gonna plant your flag. You're gonna plant your flag on Ron Hollins. But I'm not quite sure if they're going to cut – because if they were going to cut him, it was going to be for Ron Hollins. And if they were going to cut him in general, it would have been stupid not to just cut Jarnell Stokes in the first place. So I think they realize that as well. So I think it's going to be a trade, but at the same time, I just think just give him a chance, right? We see what happened with Mario Chalmers, James Johnson. Hell, Tony Allen was a role player. Like, we're not talking about superstars. Like, this role player has been on the pedestal for so long, but the fans get in their own way about not letting another role player, you know, trying to get some type of shine. Maybe he jumps off like Tony Allen did, right? Like, just give him a chance, man. He's not a scrub, or maybe he is, but you won't know until you give that guy an opportunity.
Cam, I got to run. You're the best for doing this, man. You can follow him on Twitter, at Cam Rose Show. We'll do it again, man. This was fun. Thanks so much.
Hey, my man, anytime you need me, man, you got my digits, and we'll link up and drop gems and just great grit talk for days, man.
You're the best, Cam. Take care.
Okay, have a good one, Chip.
All right.